Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm all right. Yep, I don't have anything to say about that.
Well, yeah, work's busy, you're tired. Weather's been beautiful, uncharacteristically so. I miss anything? I don't think I did.
How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm okay. I don't know if I'm at the beginning or at the tail end of a little bit of a cold.
Oh, big shock.
Yeah. I have little kids, and they just are disease factories. Yeah, so it's like kind of like a sore throat and just kind of like body aches, and I can't tell if it's getting better or worse. Better than that, I'm okay.
All right. Well, good enough. So you are headed back to work in a few weeks. We've been working, but you've been sort of on light duty. You're headed back to work.
I'm looking forward to having like a normal routine. That'll be a nice return to normalcy. And it'll be during daylight hours, which is magical.
Yeah, so you're going on to a daytime shift, is that right?
For the most part, day shift, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I think, over the years you've talked about, I kind of like the evening shift, and I had a feeling at some point.
Yeah, 7 years is is sufficient.
I had a feeling at some point you'd be like, okay, I'm ready to...
Yeah, I'm on 4-ish months of living, like, sleeping at night. And, like, my sleep is starting to return to a healthy routine where I don't, like, physically wake up at 10 p.m. every night. Like, woohoo, let's go!
Yeah, reestablishing circadian rhythms.
Yeah, which is really nice.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was like.
Yeah, no, it is. You know, I'm turning into that person that I was like always awestruck by as a young child who like wakes up at 6:30 and is just like up. You know, I always remember like as a, you know, a 19-year-old maybe or a 20-year-old, you know, thinking I just cannot imagine a world in which I wake up at 6:30 and I think I guess I'm up. But now I'm that guy. Mm-hmm. My eyes open at 6:30 and I'm just like, all right, Saturday. Like, I guess I'm up. I'm going to go make a pot of coffee.
I'm up well before that. And I have found that I am just not a morning person. When left to my own, own rhythm, I'm like a sleep from midnight, 2 a.m. to like 8 or 9 a.m. kind of person. And then I'm good. I'm not an early mornings type. And I always thought that I was because I was in the Army for so long. And I was like, oh, no, this is normal. Everyone gets up at 4:30 in the morning and starts driving into work. And this is just what I do. I'm a morning person. Turns out that's not the case.
You like to sleep in a little bit.
I don't like to be up that early.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a bit of magic that I've found in getting up at 6:30 and making a pot of coffee and reading, you know, 100 pages of a book.
Well, because you don't see your kids for 6 more hours.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, my kids are up anywhere between 9:30 to, well, shit, noon at this point because they're, you know, teenagers. But yeah, there's something about that, specifically that period of time from like 6:30 to maybe 8:30. Mm-hmm. It's just like, that is my time. Kim's not awake. Kids aren't awake. Sometimes Larry will come out and just chill. He'll just like sleep on the couch next to me, but I'll just drink half a pot of coffee, read my book. And that is like one of my most delightful.
And I get that experience like after 10 p.m.
Yeah, that sure. And, yeah. And I've oftentimes enjoyed that period of time as well. But something about the morning's a little bit.
No, because it's such a good way to start your day.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. Yeah. Something about that morning. I've really taken delight in finding that period of time for myself. So,
because the day is just filled with hope and opportunity.
Yeah. I don't know about all that, but it is a nice time of day. Yeah. Yeah. Andrew, we are in any event not here to talk about our middle-aged circadian rhythms. Rather, we're here to talk about watches, which are not wholly unrelated.
Yeah, we weren't that far off topic.
But mostly unrelated. And yeah, you know what? We don't always do this, but can we just briefly talk about, like, holistically your experience in reading about the watch releases this week? Maybe not anything notable. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
I was, like, filled with excitement. I felt like every other release that I saw felt like a reminder that we're in the golden age of small and independent brands, and even big brands are taking notice of that and doing some of the same cool shit.
Yeah. Okay.
What were your thoughts? Yeah. Seems that was a kind of a leading question that made me think that you had an answer to your question.
Obviously,
that you wanted to share, so you had to politely solicit my input first.
Yeah, no, I was more wondering if you'd had any of the same feelings. But first, I want to sort of acknowledge something. I feel like I've been on a bit of a rut where I've been kind of negative about watches, and I don't think I'm wholly through that at this point. I don't think I'm completely, I don't think I've abandoned that, that general negativity. With that said, I did feel a thing this week that I think I haven't felt in at least a few months, which is to say, like, okay, there's more to do here. There's more to do here. And I don't mean you and me. Obviously, I think we could keep doing this almost indefinitely, but rather, like, with watches, I had, like, almost some excitement this week. Not necessarily about any of the specific watches, but about the way the companies we're going to talk about or the businesses we're going to talk about sort of are approaching watches. Even a watch that I ultimately pulled from my list and that you brought back on your list. I had a watch on my list. We'll talk about it when we get there. But it was a watch that I had on my list, and I was like, no, Everett, you're not going to talk about that watch because... just no. And then you brought it back. And even as I read about that watch, I was like, you're trying to figure out what it is. Even as I read about that watch, I was like, you know what? I fucking love watches. I think that's kind of what I felt this week. It, like, there's nothing here. I was going through my list.
I think I know which one it was.
Like, when we get to it, you can guess it. Yeah. Anyway, it's not really even anything specific. It was just like, yep, I love watches. I really, really like watches. So with that, I know it's a little bit of a change from our normal pace, but do you want to get us started today?
I think I will get us started. And this is not the watch that I think that you that I resurrected into the list.
Okay.
Because we had a lot of overlap.
We did.
There were a couple things on your list that weren't on mine.
I know when I only get like three links from you, I was like, oh,
I've already called. Right. Piaget at it again with the Polo 79, and this time it's in two-tone.
This is that watch
for me. It's the one. Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be another one. Yeah. And we talked about the original release because it was fantastic. I don't know if we talked about the white gold because it's just a new color. This is a new color and is just fantastic. This screams all of the things the Piaget Polo 79 is supposed to be. Sleek and boisterous and gorgeous. So what we have is white gold fat links, like fat bands, with yellow gold skinny bands horizontally across the 79. Once I've described it like that, you can imagine it's primarily white gold with yellow gold accents. And I am in love. I wish I had the kind of money to buy it. Because the yellow gold, cool. The white gold, cool. This is two-tone magic. And there's only a few two-tone watches in the world that I've been like, yep, I get down with that. This is among them. And here's the good news. This is almost in the realm of affordable. This is only £96,000, including the 21% VAT. So if you take like this is like about 60,000 pounds if you're not having to pay VAT. A little more than that, like 70,000 pounds. So, you know, maybe you could make it happen. I love this.
You know, this is just peak sort of 80s, having been renewed for a new generation. Do you remember? So, I don't think this song was a big deal. I don't think this song was a big deal. I don't think it made it across many people's playlists. But in 2015, a duo called Wes Walker and Dill, D-Y-L, not
that's Deal,
not a household name, made a rap song called Jordan Belfort, with obvious subject matter. It should be terrible, but it's actually really fucking good. And this watch reminds me, I was like reading about this watch and that song was playing in my back of my head. I think these are just like two kids, two probably wealthy kids with way too much money that watched Wolf of Wall Street. And they were like, let's make a song about this. Anyway, it's a terrific song. And as I read about this watch, that's the theme song.
Oh yeah. This is like
that played in my head.
I see this watch. You have Chubbies, boat shoes. This watch is obviously going to be oversized and jangling off your wrist a little bit.
Yeah.
And you have to have a polo with a pattern reminiscent of like a waxed paper cup.
Two polos.
Ideally, yeah.
You go, yeah, stacked.
Yeah.
Stacked polos. Yeah, no, I think it's great. And this was the one, like I said, I had this on my list and then I was like, I'm going to take this off my list. I don't need to talk about an $80,000 watch.
It's not an $80,000 watch. Before that. Yeah.
But I'm glad you talked about it because it is really delightful. Can we just talk? I know it. Can we just talk about the watch a little bit?
I suppose.
Because we didn't really.
Okay. We've talked about it though, at least once, maybe twice.
Sure. But can we? 38 millimeters by 7.5 thick, 7.45 thick.
Yeah.
Even in all gold, it's 200 grams. And the movement on this thing is fucking nuts.
Yes.
This is an automatic micro rotor, what Piaget calls the 1200 P1. It is a 2.35 millimeter movement that is absolutely outrageous. This watch, pretty blocky construction. With that said, the bevels on it are this is one of the most delightfully constructed watches that exists on Earth. And I don't, that is literal and not hyperbolic in the least. This is just actually one of the most delightful watches on Earth. I can't afford it. I do wish there was a world that I could. I need to work really hard, but holy God.
One of the details on this that I really love that would have been just easy to not do, the pins in this bracelet are yellow gold instead of color matched white gold.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically on a bracelet, you're going to see color matching. But nope. Like we're going to make this full two-tone.
Right.
Gold, the same color shan't touch itself. And they made it so.
Andrew, do you know what a gadroon?
I think it's one of these horizontal gold bars that lays between the white gold. I don't know what a gadroon is. I love the word, though.
So from Oxford, a decorative edging on metal or wood typically formed by inverted flutings. I don't know. That's what they call the texture here. And of course, these gadroons go all the way through the watch. They don't. It's not just bracelet. They go through the mid case, but also through the die. Yeah. If you don't know this watch, you ought to know this watch. It's just one of my favorite watches on Earth.
It's, yeah.
I would love to be in a world where I saw something like this and I thought, ugh. Right? Because I think there are some people that they see this and they're like, gross.
I think this is the type of watch that a not watch person, or maybe even like an early life watch person, would look at and be like,
not that's weird.
Yeah.
It's ugly.
It's like the Ecozilla, like the orange Ecozilla.
Sure.
You know, 5 years into this journey, you're like, man, it turns out I think I really do like that thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Because this is just cool. It's not just a jewelry watch, right? Though it very much is a piece of high fashion jewelry, it's also a really cool vintage inspired design, and the movement in it is next level. I think this is a little bit more of a mature watch person's watch, or just somebody who wants some bling.
Yeah. I have heard a little bit of grumbling about the price on this.
It's 200 grams of gold.
Yeah, but even then, it's a lot of money, right? You're essentially, I mean, if it's just gold we're talking about, you're probably talking about 25,000-ish retail value for like a very, very simple, not complicated watch. So that means probably like 25 or 30. So that means that this is like a $50,000 watch in steel, which I don't think it is. Right? Are you tracking me?
I'm with you.
Yeah. So,
but I think if you look at 3X, if you're just looking at raw material, let's not think about any of the R&D, just raw material.
Yeah, but what's 200 grams of gold? I mean, it's gold's not. Like,
is it $20,000 an ounce right now?
Oh, I don't.
Before it's getting worked?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's that much. Everything just, the bottom just fell out of everything.
Gold price today. That's only, that's gold futures. 5,000 dollars an ounce right now. I thought it was way higher than that.
Yeah, you said that, and I was like, oh, that's crazy.
I thought it was way higher than that.
Yeah, 200 grams of 24 karat gold today would be $30,000 based on a spot price.
Okay.
This is, of course, not 24 karat, but still, we're probably talking about 20. Okay, so maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, these are 18 karat white and yellow. So 18 karat, 200, well, let's assume probably 170 grams.
Yeah.
Of just raw material gold that has not been worked. Never mind the R&D into this movement. Never mind the making, like the actual manufacturing and assembly of the movement.
I still think we're a little high.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
But I also think that for something like this, we're in the zone.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I think 55, 60, I wouldn't have anything to grumble about.
And if you reduce this price of 96 by 20%.
Yeah, no, I'm calling this an $80,000 watch. I know you said it's not, but getting rid of that is an $80,000 watch.
No, it's like 70 something. So,
anyway, I just love that watch.
And so. It's looks so cool because it looks so stupid, but it's also amazing.
Yeah, I don't think it looks stupid.
It does, but it's such a good way.
So Okanoskar.
Yes.
Okanoskar. I think this is cool. And so I'm just going to try to talk about what's cool about this, because really this isn't anything. I mean, just on paper, it's kind of hard, I think, to understand exactly what's going on here. But Okanoskar introduced a humble, what they're calling the EXP-02. Which is, just to be clear, this is a 20-piece limited edition, 10-piece dedicated for existing customers on lottery, 10 pieces to the public on lottery.
I think that's cool.
That is cool.
I like that execution of a super limited run.
And the point of this watch is to show off Okanoskar's in-house dial-making capabilities. which is cool. With that said, this...
You couldn't make more than 20?
This is a Humboldt. This is a Humboldt, and it looks very much like a Humboldt. But what they've done here, is in-house, Oaken Oscar has worked on developing its dial-making capabilities. And so this is sort of meant to be an ultimate exploration of what Oaken... Well, I shouldn't say any of that. I'm sort of speaking for them. But I think what this is meant to be a showcase of what Oaken Oscar can do with a dial given a challenge. And so what they've done here is they've made both a rehaut and a dial with lasers. That's fun to say.
Lasers.
Both cut from aluminum, with the chapter ring being then riveted and bonded to the dial plate, and then a matte finish applied using a 50 micron silicon carbide blasting media. Okay, what does all that mean? I don't really know. But what I know is it sounds challenging, and I think it sounds like a lot of investment that Oaken Oscar has made to be able to do this. I think there remains a question. Okay, so let's just talk about the watch, because it's a Humboldt, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a Humboldt. It's an automatic Humboldt. If you've seen an Oaken Oscar Humboldt, you're going to look at this and say, yep, that's a Humboldt, which is to say it's a sandwich dial. We've got tolerances of just, they claim, 0.01 millimeter, which is really incredible. And it's cool.
And it's cool. A reasonable price.
39.5 millimeters. Salita SW300, which is a great choice. 200 meters of water resistance. And it's $2,550, right? $2,550 if you can get in the lottery. Colors are great, which is to say it's sort of a silver with black on the underside of the sandwich and an orange seconds hand. And there's only 20 of them, okay? So I'm not going to grumble. Like, who's this for? Well, it's for the fucking 20 lucky-ass people who get one.
The 10 people who already bought and the 10 people who are about to. We salute you.
This was the watch that I saw this week that I was like, what? What are we doing? This is the watch that challenged me this week, where I was like, I'm not sure. Like, this is just like wearing a hair suit a little bit. But then also, I'm like, no, whatever. You need to relax, because it's fucking watches. You know, I used to work with a bar manager, and anytime someone would start losing their shit at work, whether it's a bartender or a cocktail, or he would say, hey, you know what we do? We sell pizza and beer. And that was just intended to be like, just shut the fuck up.
You're not having a bad day.
We sell pizza and beer. And so, right, we talk about watches. And this is a watch. And I think it's a watch that's kind of in our space. What are your thoughts about this, Andrew?
I like it. I like to see brands who, I don't think Oaken Oscar, I don't think stale is the right word for them, but just like very much in a routine. They had their kind of left and right limits established, and they worked within them, and they did a good job working within those parameters that they kind of arbitrarily applied to themselves. And I like seeing brands step out of that comfort zone and continue to push the envelope forward. I don't know what the capability of being able to produce their own dials will in the long run do, and who the fuck cares? They can do it, right? Remember going to Vero's,
how exciting that was.
Workspace.
It's exactly what popped into my head.
And they just are running a CNC machine. They're like, oh yeah, we got, you know, a prototype. We just kind of, we drew it up and we're going to see how it feels. Like, here's a couple of the ones that we've done up before. You know, we decided to tweak this a little bit and tweak this a little bit. And seeing that kind of unbridled creativity was so exciting.
You know, I didn't realize at that time, Andrew, I didn't realize at that time how rare that was in watches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's probably too bold to say they were the only ones in the country that were doing that at the time, but there weren't very many.
There weren't, and it's proven itself an untenable business model.
It was really, really cool to be in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And to be like seeing the products come out of these CNC machines and like, this is a watch that we just are fucking around with. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, see, you know, these watches. Yeah. So
just the Tuesday experiment.
That's right. That's right. So, and of course, this isn't exactly the same thing, but it feels similar, right? It feels like they're doing a thing.
It has that spirit of imagination and exploration attached to it. And I think, I hope it lends itself to more of these 20, 30, 50 piece releases where we're like, hey, we tried this new thing with a bezel or with a dial.
You know, give it up for Oak and Oscar to be really, I mean, they're one of the OGs in the space, right? In the enthusiast micro brand space. Mm-hmm. They've been around for a decade now.
Yeah.
Which is to say, what, 2016?
Mm-hmm. Like on the cutting, the bleeding edge of this proliferation of independent watchmakers.
Right.
On the heels of people who've been doing it for much longer and paved the way. But they took, they're one of those brands that grabbed the baton and really carried it forward.
There's only a few brands that really beat them to market. And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, obviously we talk about these brands frequently, but they're old guard. I'm with you though. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
It's the spirit of innovation. And from Oak and Oscar, I think is maybe the most exciting, because if you were to give me 10 brands and say, who is going to do something wildly innovative and kind of frivolous, it would not be Oak and Oscar as my pick.
Well, I think that's the fairest criticism of this project is that it is the opposite of frivolous. It's like, hey, why don't you showcase your dial making capabilities by making the same exact watch that you've been making for 10 years and go.
Yeah, but it is a little frivolous. It's like, who cares if they're making dials? But I'm so happy that they are.
Sure.
Because it's so cool. But
sure.
Like, is it objectively better than the dials they've been having manufactured for them? No. Is it objectively cooler in every imaginable way? Yes.
Don't you wish you could have like go back 18 months and grab Chase Fancher by his fucking tight collar and shake him a little bit and say, hey, make something interesting.
And then they did.
Like, just no, he didn't. He made a fucking humble. I'm sorry. If you listen, I know you don't.
But it's
but not if you the... listen to me this once. Do something different. You're doing something cool. Don't just make the same fucking watch you've been. Okay.
Maybe this is the teaser, right?
I'm done.
I think designing a whole new platform around this emerging technology within their business practice or business processes is a little foolish, perhaps, because then they're hitching this dial making capability to a wagon that they don't know runs. But if they attach it to a watch that's 10 years old and kind of celebrating a 10th anniversary with a special edition, appreciating old customers and
I actually don't know how old that Humboldt is, by the way. I'm not sure that's that.
I'm sure it's,
take a fucking risk. Take a risk.
I mean, they did. They bought a ton of machining equipment.
Well, maybe there's very
engineering dollars.
There's very little risk here. They're like, I know we can sell 20.
Yeah. Also, I think
people like the Humboldt.
I do think they could have probably made more than 20. I'm excited about it. The spirit of innovation is, I am here for it.
maybe you're right, Andrew. Maybe just next week they're going to announce. What's next?
10 more.
I'll be more positive starting right now.
So this is the watch that I thought went on and off your list. Sero Watch Company.
It's never on my list. I read about it and I was like, next.
A dress watch from a company in the Netherlands. And I looked at this and I kind of started scrolling because I like didn't really dig the first image. It kind of looked like a way too fotinaed dress watch. I was like, eh, whatever. And I kept scrolling. And then I saw the white version and it had my attention. So this is a 37.5 millimeter case, 8.7 millimeter thickness with another 0.8 millimeters of crystal height. So 9.5 total with the crystal.
Can we just say 9.5? I hate it when companies market their... Like just say it's a 9.5 millimeter watch.
Yeah, but we don't do wrist to crystal measurements like we should. Because the wrist to crystal matters. Maybe perhaps
9.5 is a great number.
I thought that would be that's why it came off of your list for a dress watch.
9.5 is a great number.
100 meters of water resistant. This is using an SW210 1B Elaboré grade, so it's a hand cranking movement. Good price on it. So what we have here is a very vintage inspired true three-hand dress watch with really lovely dial patterning. There's the vertical, just gentle texturing on all of these dial colors. We have four dial colors. They're all electroplated, vertical brushed effect, a silver, gold, blue, or red. The gold is not. The gold looks like fotinaed, like tan. The red is this really lovely, like raspberry sorbet, closer to pink color. Lovely blued hands on these. I'm confident that you don't like the font, but I love the fonts.
Wait. Which font do you think I don't like?
On the markers, the numerals.
They're Breguet. No, fuck, I love these. Oh. These are engraved gunmetal finished, electroplated gunmetal finished engraved Breguet markers. Fucking sign me up. No, I stop.
All about it. I dig these. And under 1,000?
No.
First 150.
No.
890 euros. Pre-sale for 1,000 euros. Retail price at 1,199 euros. And if you want the set, 3,596 euros. I don't know why you'd want the set. I can do without the gold. I can do without the red. The blue is really lovely, but the white just pops with that gunmetal engraved marker. It just blows up. I love this. I could do with a different strap, but that's an easy change.
Yeah. I don't know why this went on, why this was just an instant pass for me. It was an instant pass for me, but I think it's the dial. Honestly, I think it's like the dial texture is very flat, which is how it's supposed to be. But the case on this is beautiful, sort of a three-piece case that is really well constructed, at least on paper.
Straight link, five link bracelet available on it.
Yeah, beads of rice.
Right? Oh yeah, beads of rice. Straight link, beads of rice.
Beads of rice bracelet. Also, it comes with potentially an ostrich leg strap if you're into
that. and an ostrich leg, like
if you're into that sort of thing. 100 meters of water. No, I have a really hard time criticizing this watch. With that said, I just find it a little boring.
It is. It's a dress watch. Size they don't is have great. To. Be, they don't have to be boring, but they frequently are.
Dimensionally, it's good. Out of the Netherlands, I don't know if we said that.
We did.
Okay.
Yeah, I like this.
I do wish that they didn't have the model name signature signed at 6 o'clock. I'm not sure why they have that. Why they need that?
I could do without that.
I'm fine with the 12 o'clock text. It feels very sort of 1950s, which is where the inspiration for a watch like this comes from.
I think I would have liked to have seen Sero Watch Company at the 12 o'clock and instead of signature at the 6, like Netherlands.
Sure. Or just open at 6. Maybe they thought because of the nature of the dial is just too much open space. But because
it's all dial.
I'm okay with the handset. Yeah, it's a lot of dial.
Well, that's never happened before.
What was that?
Getting invited to work.
Oh.
I don't know why I'm getting invited to work. Oh, there we go.
So we are in, as you guys know, perhaps as you know, we are in Eugene, Oregon, which has been the site of the latest riots. The latest sort of DHS-related ICE riots. I say that with my tongue firmly planted in the side of my cheek because they've been in the grand scheme of riots.
Moving on. Everett, what have you got next?
They've been pretty tame. I'll say that. Is that fair?
We are moving right on along with your next pick, which happens to be.
You don't get to call my next pick for me.
No, I was cute. I was teeing you up.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of choices. I'm gonna take my time while we talk about our riots.
I'm gonna pee on the floor.
That's your floor. Go ahead. Let's talk about the Christopher Ward.
Oh, that's what I was going to suggest.
C60 Clipper GMT Pan Am. Christopher Ward, the British company Christopher Ward, doing a Pan Am collaboration GMT watch, which perhaps not the most original idea. And if that's all you know about it, you might have even sort of slightly negative thoughts, and those negative thoughts would be wrong,
mm-hmm.
because this watch is terrific. So, famously, Pan Am had the first transatlantic flight. The first of those happening on, what was it, October 26, 1958, with a Boeing 707 Clipper America flying from JFK to Paris.
Idlewild.
JFK, formerly known FKA Idlewild Airport, because it's 1958.
They weren't naming things after him yet.
From JFK to Paris, and this watch is a celebration of that achievement. It is a Flyer GMT watch that comes in famous Pan Am colors. We've got a bit of an ivory dial. We do have some Fotina, which I think is okay in this variation. With a 42 millimeter light catcher case. So 12.45 millimeters, almost 50 lug to lug, 300 meter depth. This is a big, tough, serious, burly, butch watch. On the die or on the bezel of this, we have a 24 time zone layout, giving a bit of a nod to our history, but also our GMT time function. So we've mm-hmm. got sort of world timer-ish feel. But instead of traditional world timer layout, what we've got is 24 airport codes that have been historically important to Pan Am. A couple of those call reference Dallas, which is one of the earliest airports that Pan Am flew to both London and Frankfurt from. Also Dallas, where Christopher Ward has its first U.S. show. We've got a LPB for La Paz, Bolivia, which was one of Pan Am's main South America destinations. And then we've got a EYW, which is the Key West International Airport, which is red, representing the airport location of Pan Am's first ever flight in 1927, which is cool. On your date window, which is a dial color match to the dial date window, 26 is in blue because that is the day, the October 26th.
The day of the fateful flight.
The day of the fateful flight. We've got a 707 as the balance on the second hand. Just like Easter egg after Easter egg on this thing. Really lovely. Very much Christopher Ward, but also very much Pan Am. The back of the case back here is engraved with a terrific, what do they call it? Blue Meatball Pan Am logo.
Yeah, the globe. Do you talk about the little airplane?
Yeah, on the balance is a 707, yeah.
And the real joy of reading this article for me was not just the watch. There was a misprint on the bezel.
Oh, yeah.
For Zurich.
Yeah.
That will be corrected in production models. But it is, instead of ZRH for Zurich, it says ZHR.
Yeah.
Which is just a fun misprint. And I really hope the person who gets to own this model, that's the favorite part.
These come on a Bader 3-link, but it also comes with a sort of navy pass-through textile strap. And they're beautiful. I think U.S. dollars, these are $19.95 for the retail price, which, ouch.
There's only 707 of them, though.
And they're making 707, which is, again, an homage to the Boeing 707 that first made that transatlantic flight. I really like this watch. I really like it. It's big. This is a big, beefy watch, as I said, with multiple adjectives earlier. But I really think it's terrific.
Yeah. 330S-2 movement. This is delightful.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. Well done, Christopher Ward and Pan Am. Does Pan Am still...
I don't think so.
Okay. What you got?
Oh, Hanhart. I think we talked about this being one of my favorite watches from last year. The 417 ES has come in a new colorway, the Moby Dick.
The old white whale.
Old white whale. So really the only difference here is that it's a white dial, but it's really lovely. So the so-called Moby Dick is because most of these originals came with dark dials, and a few of them were produced for the civilian market with white dials. And so they were just a less common reference. So they were the white whale that people hunted for. And now you can buy them brand new in box from Hanhart for, the same price as usual. On a bracelet, 2,490 euros, including your VAT. So as a reminder, we have a 39mm by 13.6 with a big old bitch of a crystal. So it's 11.55 without the crystal. 46 lug to lug on it, 100 meters of water resistance, Sleda SW510 hand-wound chronograph. Just terrific. This white is really good. Blued hands that really pop. I think it's just a slightly creamed color loom. I don't think this is Fotina.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, I'm with you. It is an ivory. It is an ivory colored loom, but it plays more. It plays more sort of authentic than a typical Fotina. Certainly not Ken Legg tan.
Yeah,
which Christopher Ward and the Pan Am kind of does use, and that's my mm-hmm. one sort of irk about that watch. No, Hanhart is really conservative with their
super Luminova, light old radium.
Yep.
Thermal blued hands. Yeah. This is a really good execution of the white whale.
And anti-magnetic on these up to 1600 a.m. This is...
I don't know if that's important. Like, I don't know what kind of magnetism I experience on a day-to-day basis. Like, how anti-magnetic does my watch need to be?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... that you or I probably have a ton of need for that. With that said, it is a thing that people need. And we're nerds, right? You also don't need 300 or 500 or 8 billion meters of water resistance, right?
I like having it.
Bingo.
There's the one.
You know, this is, as you said, this is very much just a 417 ES, but it is probably my favorite execution of this. One of the things I like, Hanhart has not until this watch ever used the Moby Dick designation. Although historically that was the collector's nickname for these white dial 417s because they were tricky to get. So Hanhart has just leaned into that nickname.
They've just appropriated.
That's right.
What was gifted to them.
So these are, and these are regulated in house. Tolerances of 0 to +8 seconds per day. No negative deviation allowed in their main positions. And the price on these is really terrific. I mean, 2,500 euros, yeah. I think under 3,000 for this is just fucking rad.
I love these chronographs. This is, these are on a short list of future acquisitions.
And the size on these, I think really almost perfect. You know, you did mention, I just bitched about talking about both the with and without crystal, but it's important in a watch like this because you've really got a big...
So 2 millimeters of it.
A big crystal. So this is a really well-sized watch. Even at 13.6, you know, you think, okay, well, that's pretty thick, but a huge portion of that. I mean, this is 11 and a half hand-wound chronograph until you get to that big bubble crystal. That's a meaningful...
And this is one of the few watches that I will say definitely get it on the bracelet, but I don't think I'd ever wear it on the bracelet. It looks so good on leather.
You're not wrong. Yeah, and the leather, they do a good job with the leather strap they sell this on. But yeah, these are great. I love the fluting on the bezel. I love the blued hands. Yeah, thermal blued hands. Yeah, great. Really, really great release from Hanhart. Does that mean it's my turn?
It is, again, your turn.
I am going to talk about the, I'm saving that one. We're going to get to that one. I'm going to talk about Heron. Heron has released an update to its Marinor dive watch. Heron being the Canadian company who has, I don't know, I think I've probably been guilty of like poo-pooing this watch as being a little boring.
I think I overlook a lot of Heron releases because they look kind of like an amalgam of a lot of other things that I like.
Yeah.
But I like their watches. I also really like that they found a way to incorporate a pack of Newports into their product photography.
Yeah, they did.
Like,
they did do
fuck
that.
Yeah, 2026.
As recently as 2023, Heron was crowdfunding watches. That's over. Those times are over. Added to this re-release of the Marinor is case hardening, 1200 HV scratch resistance. Ooh. The Marinor is a 39 by 46 millimeter, 250 meters of water resistance, 12.2 thick, which is a 0.7 reduction in previous. I think previously these were 13 or 12.9 thick. We've got a box sapphire with a domed sapphire bezel insert.
It adds a lot of texture and depth. Like it's like got topography.
Yeah,
that's the top of this watch. And it's a very apparent.
Crown guard on this guy, maybe you like that, maybe you don't. I think it works really well with the sort of angular case style that they've gone with here. A flat length three row bracelet with an adjustable sort of on the fly adjustability. I think it's like a push and slide micro adjustment, 20 millimeters at the lugs. And two new colors. So previously for this, we had sort of a really, really nice dark blue, sort of slight ombre finish dial, and then a black with gilt. We've added a lighter blue and a green. We've added a lighter blue and a green, with the green using the aforementioned Newports. They called that green not Newport, which I would have liked, but rather menthol, which I'm fine. I'm fine.
I fucking love that.
Thanks, Heron. Thanks, Heron. Great case back on these.
Yeah, really cool. This is laser etched. It's got to be.
It is, but it looks like it's hand engraved.
It does. So I, growing up,
there's a face. There's a profile of a face on the back.
I want to tell you about this. So this is that very like 1930s, 40s kind of slouch hat with a bill. Some would call it maybe a bus driver hat.
Sure.
With this bearded fella smoking a pipe. Growing up, my grandparents had this portrait in their living room of my grandpa on like a little skiff boat in this bay outside of where they lived in Alaska. And
it was this guy.
This is my grandfather.
That's
like,
awesome.
That's that portrait that hung on there in their living room for my entire life. And it was kind of painted in the feel of like a self-portrait, but clearly somebody else painted it. And it was like, thinking back on it, it's the weirdest thing to have. I mean, it was that big. It was 4 feet wide and 2.5 feet, maybe 3 feet tall. Huge, beautiful landscape behind him because it's Juneau, Alaska. But just a weird like portrait of yourself to be so like proudly displayed in your home. I don't know. I can't imagine having just a big ass painted portrait of myself prominently displayed in my home.
I think it's fantastic.
It's weird thinking back on it, but I absolutely love that. Right as soon as I saw his case back, I was like, I've seen this before. Cause he's got a pipe in his mouth and everything, like big bushy red beard, this bus driver hat. Yeah.
$640 for these.
That's the real win here. So when I said it was kind of like an amalgam of other things that I like, it's because it does. It does a lot of the same things that a lot of watches that we've talked about, not today, but we've talked about a lot. The colors feel kind of like Baltic-y. The everything about it kind of feels familiar, but they're doing their own thing and they're doing it at a really aggressive price point. Like this flat link bracelet with the domed sapphire bezel insert, the big ass box crystal, like this just everything about it works. And menthol as a colorway is baller.
Yeah. 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 No, I'm with you. I sort of hesitate to say, oh, this reminds me of that. And this reminds me of that because they've done a good job making their own watch. With that said, I think our point is we've maybe sort of, for whatever reason, not latched onto this, but it's $640.
It's hard not to.
Yeah. Latch onto it. Latch on. I, you know, I'm maybe not a buyer for this, but that has to do more with where I am in my watch experience than it does anything to do with this watch. I think if you're buying a watch today, if you're sort of building out a collection, gosh, I'm really excited about this watch, I think.
I'm excited about this kind of addition into that affordable space, right? We have a really well-specced, attractive, thoughtfully designed dive watch coming in at under $1,000. And I'm not a buyer for this either, but it's because I already have things that this creates a lot of overlap.
That's right.
I'd rather hold on to my 650 and apply it towards getting a Piaget 79.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think the point we're trying to make is just this is a great watch, and it's probably on us that we've not really been on this before, and it's been around for a while. You know, in fairness to us,
2023 was their first release, right?
2020? Yeah. No, they're a 2021 company. The Marinor came out in 2023, yeah, which was a crowdfunded. So, in fairness to us, the last time the Marinor was released, it was crowdfunded, and that's something that we've shied away from a little bit on this show. Not completely.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It causes some skepticism.
Look at the Heron. That's the point we should make. Look at the Heron. This is a cool watch. If you're in the market for a $650 dive watch, $500 dive watch, whatever it is, this is worth looking at.
Agreed. IFL watches Super Seville number 4.
This is the Super Sevilla.
Oh yeah, Sevilla
or Seville has been. has that been the like the
platform?
The platform for IFL. Mm-hmm. It seems like we've seen a lot of these
with Bulova. It's the Super Sevilla.
it's Bulova. I guess it's Seville.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Number 4, Risky Riches, and this is featuring the Monopoly guy in a really fun way. It's got a kind of old school feeling. What's the word I'm looking for? Slot machine.
Sure.
Wheels spinning, gold all over the place, money bag or money sign eyeballs reaching at the date window serves as the big red ball for which to actuate the slot machine. Why is that? That keeps eluding me. I don't even know what I want to call it.
Well,
I want to call it a money machine, but that's not what it is.
Slot machine?
Yeah, but it keeps eluding me.
Oh, I see.
And then I keep wanting to say money machine. which is not what they do.
This is why Andrew's not allowed to go back to Vegas.
These are not ATMs. They're reverse ATMs. You just keep putting monies in it and then they don't come out. But then when they do, they come all at once. Limited edition, 300 pieces, $1,190. Every time I see an IFL Super Seville, I'm like, man, I love this platform and I think I want one. And then I look at them again and I'm like, I think I don't want one, but I do. I love the IFL watches artwork on these. I think this is a fantastic platform for this type of application. And I love it.
Do you think, I don't believe Hasbro's money man is in the public domain. I don't know that for sure. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think it's old enough. I just feel a little risky in that regard.
Oh, Risky Riches.
Hmm. Maybe that's a middle finger.
It could be. And I think it's also like, I mean, Hasbro Money Man IP.
Is this perhaps licensed?
It's not licensed.
Maybe it is public domain. Maybe I'm just wrong about that. It's a really cool dial. And the artwork here works for me in a way that sometimes IFL's artwork doesn't work. I think this is pretty cool. And I don't always feel that way about IFL, but
he's got to still be in the vault, in the IP vault. It's 100 years.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. This Monopoly's not 100 years old.
No, I think there's enough artistic license taken to perhaps have legs to stand on.
Sure.
And also, like, one would think that Bulova.
How many pieces here? I mean, really limited. 300 pieces. So really limited exposure in that regard.
77 would have been a better option.
Oh, look, here's a comment on Fratello. Much of the risk here is about how close Bulova can get to Hasbro's IP without getting sued. And this says, I don't think Bulova has to worry about anything here. They sell watches to IFL for an agreed upon price, and that is the end of Bulova's involvement. Then IFL goes off and does whatever they want with the watch. But I do agree, IFL might be flying too close to the sun. Okay, well, that's from the comment section on the Fratello article that will be linked in the show notes, which is to say, those are just people on the internet talking.
Yeah.
Just like we're people on the internet talking.
My IP expertise is pretty limited. I know that we are not supposed to play music that isn't licensed on our show. And our music is licensed.
Like we would never, for instance, play Wes Walker Jr. and Dills Jordan Belfort on this show.
We would not. Because we don't want to get cease and desist letters.
Andrew, can I talk to you for just a second about Astron Banks?
No.
Full disclosure, people. Andrew Perez is one of my very good friends.
One of my favorite people on the planet.
One of our favorite people. He is, like you are not, the words that are going to come out of our mouths in the next 3 to 4 minutes are not objective criticism. These are going to be the words of friends of Andrew Perez talking about his new release that we first got eyes on in New York back in October. Mm-hmm. And I fucking love it. Okay. Yes. What this is, Andrew's calling this the Terra Scout. This is a field watch. It comes
which
in
is Earth Scout.
Two dial colors, white and black. Both of these are three-tiered sandwich dials. White is a fully loomed dial. Black is negative of that, with loom appearing in the cutouts of the sandwich. These have a SW300 movement.
Did you say W?
SW300 movement with a, or excuse me, no, a Le Jupre G100 movement.
Yeah, he went to
LGG. With a very interesting date complication, which is a full 31-day rotation around the inner track and an indicator on the appropriate date.
That sucks. This dial's upside down.
Yep.
38.5 millimeter case.
Pretty
12.4 thick. 10.4 without the crystal. That's a big difference. That's why we talk about crystal versus case height, Everett.
Pretty busy for a field watch. Definitely not your traditional field watch. We do have quadrants on the minute track with alternating blue and green loom. The main loom on this watch being blue, so that green gives you just a little zhuzh. It's a little something, a little je ne sais quoi. That's French for something.
I don't know.
I'm telling you, we get three.
That's what it means.
something.
I don't know what.
three metal options. Actually, one metal option in three different varieties. We've got a Cerakote. Is it Coyote tan? What are we calling it?
He's calling it desert sand Cerakote. It kind of is like Coyote FDE.
Yes. Yes. We also have sandblasted silver steel, or you can get black PVD. All three of these available in all three of the cases. What more to say?
The full loom white is baller.
Yes. Desert Sam listened to 100 pieces.
I think those were gone.
Are they gone?
They might be. Well, I don't know. I'll go to the website. I'll check.
$975 for the pre-order on the Desert Sand. $875 standard edition pre-order price. Full retail is $1,195 and $995.
Yeah, the Cerakote is sold out.
Okay. Well,
I have to holler at my boy.
We'll have to call him and say, hey, Andrew, we've said all these really nice things about you.
Make 1,001, please.
give me them goods. I love this watch. I love this watch. My favorite detail is the lugs. And in person, this is way more noticeable.
It's the star of the show.
Yes. Yeah. These lugs, what are we going to call these? Can I call these a clawfoot lug?
I'm going to say clawfoot also.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Is that where your head was at?
Yeah.
Clawfoot lug. There's probably a better name for them. Not going to learn it.
Real Pure short, 2-4. Real sharp downturn.
With a bit of a scoop.
Yep, a little bit of a scoop. And they're
a ball.
There's four of them.
If you were
to set it down, they would support the watch like clawfoots.
That's right. I had a joke and I'm not going to say it. It's totally inappropriate. What's next, Andrew? We've got at least one more watch that we need to talk about.
Okay. I'd like to talk next about, how about this? The main Hudson 38 MK5.
You think MK5 or Mark 5?
Well, there's just two letters. There's no R.
Okay.
So, much like MK Ultra, it's not Mark Ultra.
Okay.
That would be a cool name, Mark Ultra. So the Hudson 38 Mark 5 MK5, call it for what you will. This is obviously the fifth edition of the Hudson. And this is here we go. Hang on. 38 millimeter, 47 lug to lug, 13 thick, 300 meters of water resistance, powered by a Lejupere G100. About $1,000 on a bracelet, including VAT. This is good. So the upgrades from 4 to 5, where are we at? I have to scroll back up. New sandblasted texture dial, which is, it's just a sandblasted texture dial, right? There's nothing particularly special about this. This is good. This, like, in the way of just kind of iterative improving on a watch, this is good. And I like it. And it's under $1,000. They've slimmed it down. I don't remember what the previous edition version was in the way of thickness. 13 millimeters for a 300 meter dive watch. Yep, I'm here for it. I like the texture on the dial. I like the simplicity of the fonts. I like the fonts on the bezel. They're like kind of digital display. I like it. This is a perfectly unoffensive $1,000 dive watch. Ceramic insert. It's the things.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, we've got certainly the digital text on the dial is very much Rolex, but the watch doesn't feel overly subby, although it's clearly a sub homage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that in the capital H homage sense, but there's clearly a lot of sub happening here. But the dial's their own thing. I mean, really, the whole watch is their own thing. I love the minute track on the rehout. I actually think this watch is a killer value. At $1,000, I think this watch is a killer value. The 5-link bracelet, it's a 5-piece 3-link bracelet. To my eye, looks incredibly well done for the price, for the $1,000 you're going to pay for this. Also, the profile view on this watch, the case finishing looks phenomenal. The case back here, again, we've got sort of a Rolex-ish case back, which is to say, yeah, we've got sort of a fluted, although you also have like standard notches in the case back to unscrew it. Man, this thing is really well done. I think for the $1,000 you pay, ceramic, micro adjust or on the fly adjustment on the bracelet. Jeez Louise. This is a great value.
Yeah. This is money.
Really, really, really good value on this.
And if you look at the wrist to crystal, even considering it's a 13 millimeter, if you look at that profile.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a big bubble crystal on this too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I do know that Maine is one of these companies that, you know, occasionally people will say, oh, this and that. They've had a few sort of problematic Reddit posts about their QC and customer service over this. So your mileage may vary in that regard. With that said, I think the vast majority of their companies have these watches that they're happy with.
Seiko is famous for misaligned
stuff. Right, right.
Like, it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's almost such a thing that one starts to think that perhaps Seiko does it on purpose.
I think the last watch I want to talk about, I'm not sure if that's the last watch we're going to talk about, because Andrew's got agency.
I make decisions here.
He makes decisions.
I peed on the floor.
Uh, I We don't do this very often, but we're going to do it today because Michael Peñate was the only person I could find that had written about this release. So we're going to link to a Two Broke Watch Snobs article in our show notes. And there's nothing wrong. We don't avoid that specifically. It's just a little atypical. But Michael had written about this watch that came my way via Reddit, specifically the It's About Time newsletter wrote about this. Citizen introduces an affordable 39.5mm Pro Masterland GMT watch for 2026. This is an Eco Drive Land GMT. And man, I'm really into this. This has got a bit of a Raymier's vibe. It is a 39.5mm GMT with a bucket load of water resistance. Great sort of 200 meters water resistance, I should just say that. ISO standards, ISO standard compliant, GMT hand, really, really terrific texture. Now, in the United States, they've released this in red with a stainless fixed 24-hour bezel. The texture on this is pretty...
aggressive?
Pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
I like it, but it might not be your thing.
The gold 24-hour hand contrast against the red is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. These are $600, $595 in the United States, which I think is a really, really good price. You're not going to... I mean, this is Citizen, right? You're not going to... This bracelet is going to be... This is exactly the bracelet you expect.
If there's something goofy happening on the flip lock side of the bracelet.
Oh yeah, I've seen that picture. What do you? What?
It's not a link attaching that flip lock side to the bracelet.
It's just folded metal with a rivet.
Yeah,
that's how that construction goes. So this is not. Like, compare this to...
I'll say the pin and collar link, like, pins in these bracelets. I broke my Nighthawk bracelet trying to size it.
This is not, like, compare this to the Heron, for instance. Mm-hmm. You're not getting the same look. With that said, this is still very, very cool. Now, the thing that got me... So this version of this watch didn't get me super excited. With that said, on the Citizen Hong Kong website right now, they have this in four versions.
Mm.
So there is the red that you can get on the US site. There is a blue, very similar to the red, but with a sort of a denim blue dial. There is a, praise the Lord, a full black dial.
Textured with, still?
Still textured.
Ooh, I do like.
But with a red GMT hand with red accents. So sort of a crimson GMT and accents. And then there is a PVD. Comes on a PVD, two-tone PVD. So like a gunmetal PVD case with a black PVD bezel with a green dial, and
I see you.
This one does not come on a bracelet.
I'm okay with that.
I
don't like it, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
because this bracelet is kind of a throwaway.
A little bit. That's right. That's right. I will say, the Hong Kong website lists these at 38.6mm. I do not. So. The U.S. website says 39.5 on the red. The Hong Kong website has four of these, including the red listed, all of them at 38.6mm. I do not believe that they have two different sizes of that. I just don't believe
it. I think the Hong Kong website is probably not accounting for crown guards and crown. Just case diameter, absent crown guards.
You think
that's a sufficient margin of error?
That's more than a millimeter, though.
Those crown guards are more than a millimeter. That's 3 millimeters easily, maybe 4 millimeters of crown guard.
Maybe it's not accounting for the crown, which is this fantastic citizen knurled big old like tool watch crown.
I think that there is a question mark about how big this watch is.
There is a question mark, yeah.
I think we have to leave it at that for
the today. Profile view on this watch, this mid case, is like pure 90s, like sultry, soft, round.
I'm gonna say 2000s, but I'm with you.
Yeah. I am for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I get Ray Mears vibes.
I get like the legs of like the fertility statues, like the women in those like fertility statues.
Get the fuck out of
That's here. What those look like. Right? Tell me that's not like a fertility statue thigh.
Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Okay, so my kids know how to work Netflix, which is fine, whatever. Usually I hate what they find, and they stick with age-appropriate stuff, so like I'm not like lamenting it. They started watching Mark Rober's Crunch Labs on Netflix, and man, I just could not be more excited about this kind of television, right? Because every once in a while, like, I come downstairs and they're watching, like, Mr. Beast games. And you know what? Good for him. He's made a bucket load of money and he does fun stuff and kids love him. And also, like, come on. Like, we can do better than that. This guy does do better than that. So for those of you unfamiliar somehow with Mark Rober, he is a social media YouTube guy who...
He's a NASA engineer. Can we lead with that?
He who left his engineering job at NASA after he worked on...
To make Porch Pirate glitter bombs.
Yes. So after he helped design the terminal landing stage of the Mars rover, he's like, I'm gonna make glitter bombs. And that's what he did. So he got on YouTube and he started doing all this like crazy stuff and then started doing longer videos of like cool engineering. And there's 2 seasons available of his show.
Squirrel obstacle courses. Yeah,
Squirrel Ninja Warrior. Octopus Ninja Warrior, but in, you know, obviously in a tank. The kids love it. I love it because they're watching a dude doing STEM stuff in a fun way, and they're just enamored by it, right? He talks in a really... He's doing pretty high-level engineering, but makes it really palatable and really engaging for kids, such that, like, I think we are going to get the kids the Crunch Labs, like, STEM kits, which are, like, a monthly subscription where you get, like, a STEM toy, and then a corresponding QR code to watch the video of like how to build it and why it works and like kind of a non-traditional approach to engineering and to science. And I love that, like making this stuff palatable and showing kids that it can and probably should be fun. He made a like an actual pool of Jell-O, which I guess is hard. And then when he explains why it's hard, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Because I would not have been successful in this. And after my first attempt of just like a red pool of sugar water and failed gelatin, I'd be like, well, I guess I'll move on to the next cool thing. But that's his thing. And the kids love it. There's, I don't know how many episodes, 18 or so episodes on Netflix. They're fairly short. But they're all like really wholesome and really engaging. And also like they're not watching just shit. It's like the SEO designed way to like engage with kids, but the material that they're engaging with is perhaps my favorite available on Netflix, in that they're seeing problems presented and seeing somebody think through the problem in a brilliant way, and I love it.
So we've been watching it together. It's awesome.
I'm a huge Mark Rober fan.
Yeah, I mean, what fucking rocket scientist is like, I think I'm going to go watch it. I'm going to go make YouTube videos. What an asshole. Like, can you imagine being that smart?
And at this point, you know, he's, I assume, doing all right for himself.
He could probably retire.
I watched a movie right before I came over here, Andrew. And I will admit to having been brought to tears a little bit, within about a half hour of me coming over to your house tonight. I watched a new Netflix documentary about a 45-year-old event, specifically.
Oh, I almost watched this today.
The 1980, the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team that famously defeated the USSR team before going on to defeat Finland for the gold medal in the 1980 Olympics, expected to finish somewhere between 7th and 12th in the Olympics, win it all at a time
where there were 12 teams.
At a time when the United States was really, really, really struggling in many respects, economically, and just sort of the spirit of the country was down. It was a moment, right? This documentary is so good, Andrew. It's so good. Even if you know the story.
Well, everyone knows the story. Everyone's watched Miracle on Ice.
That's right. Even if you know the story.
Is it just Miracle or is it Miracle on Ice?
So there's a movie from 1981 called Miracle on Ice that I think very few people have seen. There's a 2004 Disney movie called Miracle starring Kurt Russell that I think many more people have seen. And now there's a Netflix documentary called Miracle,
The Boys of 80.
And it is just really, really lovely. Really lovely. Really well done. One of the things, I'll just provide this nugget. One of the things that I think I was previously maybe unaware of, and Miracle does a little bit of work on this, the Kurt Russell character, Kurt Russell plays Herb Brooks in Miracle, and he's sort of a cantankerous guy. But this movie really does a good job talking about, he's an enigmatic guy, Herb Brooks, the coach of that team. But I think the movie, without dwelling on it, does a really, really, really good job displaying why he, probably more so than any other person, certainly more than the players, was responsible for that victory. A really discreet, kind of old school approach to coaching that wasn't, it's not all roses, right? There are, in fact, some bad words and some bad expressions targeted at him. But when you back away from it, and you look at the things he did and the way he did those things, he was not a man of many words. And the few words he did have were oftentimes harsh, very rarely loving or friendly. But you hear about this. This movie does a really good job of saying, this is all Herb said. He just said this thing. And you're like, that was the fucking thing he needed to say. Right? Like, it's very easy in retrospect, but not part of the story. I think historically, really not. The public doesn't say, oh, Herb Brooks. After watching this, I am just really enamored by his personality. And I think that there's some lessons to be had there. The way he treats the players, the way he treats the teams, the way he keeps distance, the regret he has about that distance, but also sort of unapologetically so. Anyway, I think it's just fantastic. I loved it. I recommend you watch it. I loved it.
And the title, The Boys of 80, is so fantastic. The oldest player on that team, there's two of them. They were 25.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And like, most of them are
teenagers.
Yeah, like, that's right.
19, ranging from 19 to 25, this entire roster, most of them 19, 20, 21. The Russian, the Soviet Union team, dudes in their 30s, late 20s, like...
Yeah, we're a few years away from this changing, but that was still in the old days of the Olympics where the United States is putting up true amateurs and playing against pros when they travel. So, mm-hmm. that, of course, famously, that changes really 88 and then famously in 1992 with the Dream Team.
Yeah, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a significant paradigm shift in the Olympics.
But these kids are college grads who have never played in the NHL, who are hoping to play and many of them do play later in the NHL, but
or are currently playing in college.
That's right. That's right. So pretty cool, really a fun story. Even if you know it, I recommend watching it. It's a different telling of that story than you've had.
I mean, we've all watched 100 true crime documentaries on the same topics. Right. How many yeah. Zodiac killer documentaries do you think you've watched?
Many.
Yeah. More than a dozen.
That's right. Yeah. I just thought this was great. My favorite part about it was commentary, not just by Al Michaels. So Al Michaels, unsurprisingly, is an important part of this story because, you know, he's the guy who's there. He's doing the announcing. But also George Will talks a lot. They get George Will to talk about this event, which I just found delightful. And anyway, that's all I have to say about it. But go watch it. You're going to see it. It's brand new on Netflix. Just watch it.
I love Al.
He's great. He's really good. I think almost everybody they talk to in this thing tears up a little bit at some point, or at least gets a little.
It was such a thing, right? You know, hosting the Olympics and being this underdog, defeating the, you know, we're like in the throes of the Cold War still, and then defeat the Soviet Union at like in our home. Yeah, I mean, just that story alone, if that were the storyline, even if the U.S. team had gone into it as the favorite and wins, this is still a fantastic storyline. But the fact that they were this like ragtag group of Island of Misfit Toys.
Bad News Bears.
That were brought together and achieved.
Going up against Ivan Drago.
Yeah. If he dies, he dies. Yeah, and then they did it. It was a huge unifying moment for America.
Yeah, really, 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 really fantastic story. Good movie about that fantastic story.
I do hope that Lindsay Vonn gets healthy enough to ski next week.
How old is Lindsay Vonn?
She's 40.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of how long you were late. I've been out for 4 months, and I don't even know exactly what happened.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, go to our website. It's watchclicker.com. That's where we post articles and reviews and other things about watches from time to time. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can do that at 40and20_watchclicker or at watchclicker, both of those on Instagram. If you'd like to support us, and this is important, if you'd like to support us, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That is how we pay for all our hosting costs, which are a lot. And those of you who are supporting us now, we thank you. If not, just go check it out. Patreon.com/40and20. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.